This week on the Wildlife Herd Podcast, hosts Dallas Ingram and Jess McGuire talk about careers in wildlife resources. We'll be discussing the experiences you may need, how to prepare a resume, and getting ready for the interviews. Join us for episode 10 that we're calling This Ain't Animal Planet.
This podcast was a mess.
All right, welcome back to Wildlife Herd Podcast. I'm Dallas, and I'm here with Jess today. And I think we're going to talk a little bit today about careers in wildlife.
Yes.
How do you get into a career in wildlife?
Right. How do you get to start? Because now it's a lot different than, I think, what we dealt with. But also a lot of it is very much the same.
Yes. So if you decide that this is for you, then give you some steps on how to get into these careers, some resumes, interview, building things. So we'll talk about those towards the end. But first, I think we wanted to talk a little bit about what is a career in wildlife like, and some of the variety of things that are out there that you can do within wildlife field.
Yeah, I think, a big point of this today is to dispel some myths and misconceptions, which we love to do.
Yeah.
About the wildlife field.
Yeah.
We don't hardly ever touch or see the critters that we are working in the name of.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the biggest things.
Yeah.
If you want to do that, you need to go into like zookeeping, animal rehab, vet tech, those type of fields if you want that hands-on experience. But we're all conservation is habitat creation and restoration.
I sit behind a desk a lot of it.
Or a windshield.
Talking to people. Because a lot of us, it's kind of funny that most of the people in the wildlife field are very much introverted.
Yes.
And
like people.
Right. And we think, I'll go into wildlife because
I can avoid people.
Guess what? That is a large part of your job. You know, there are a few jobs where you can get away from people for most of the time. But even, the technicians who are on the management areas, they still have to encounter people and dealing with people and asking questions. And
we deal with like every kind of person.
Oh,
I think
everybody.
Everybody.
Yes. Yeah. We could go probably have a whole episode on crazy encounters with people at gas stations and
or on WMAs.
Yep.
Pointing up a tree with a chainsaw.
Yep. So just, if you think you're going to get away from people,
embrace it now.
Right. You just got to learn some people skills, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That's part of it. And like Jess said, this is not, your Animal Planet, your Wildcrats, whatever, Wild Kingdom as we grew up on. I'm going to age myself a little bit. Those shows that you grew up where they were always handling the animals and, getting all cuddly, and that doesn't happen. We try to find opportunities to put hands on every now and then, but we kind of have to make some of those opportunities.
Yeah. I mean, where it really comes down to it, the main drivers of conservation, the people that are really conserving a lot of ground in the name of wildlife are hardly ever dealing with the animals. Now, you and I have both been in positions where we've been very fortunate and we've been able to spend a few years here and there. I was a red cockaded woodpecker biologist for a few years. So I was able to catch them and release them and band them and do all that. But those opportunities are incredibly rare.
Yeah.
And it is so important that people understand that, yes, that is a great opportunity. It's something to aim for when, chance lets it.
Right.
But the majority of jobs that are available have to do with private lands work or technicians on a wildlife management area. So driving a tractor,
burning, Yep. So most of the hands-on that you're going to get to do is going to be in your graduate project. If you get to do some, not all graduate projects are hands-on. I'll say mine were hands-on, but it was dead animals.
Yeah.
So unfortunately in our field, if we're touching an animal, it's probably a dead animal.
You and I, we spent some time in the wildlife disease world.
Yep.
And that's lots of necropsies, but that's a great point because with my master's research, unfortunately, I was dealing with dead animals in the museum and things like that. But my PhD, I was trapping a ton of tortoises, handling a ton of tortoises, But then when I actually got done and I was doing tortoise conservation, I hardly ever got to handle a tortoise. I got to see them down in their burrows with our cameras, but
And that's part of it. I mean, it's you want the animals to be wild, so we're not handling them.
Right.
And the few folks who get out there, like in some of the regional biologist positions for the state agencies, or if you're working for APHIS, you're handling animals because they're a nuisance.
Right.
And so a lot of times those animals are euthanized, or they're just trapped and moved away. So you're not handling animals in the nice, cuddly, best situation, and you're doing it in front of a bunch of people.
Sometimes, yep.
So that's usually what happens with a lot of them, is they're out there dealing with the public who's scared of whatever the animal is, and they're all standing around now with cell phones videoing, and so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So it makes nuisance a lot more fun. But it's still a great job. You still get to help, like Jess said, because you're helping the habitat, restoring that for the animals. So if this is something that you're still interested in, you enjoy being outside.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key thing, too, is we're out in all the different types of weather.
Yes.
You never know. It's not an 8-to-5 job.
Nope.
There are weekends that we work sometimes. Sometimes it is 8-to-5 or and Monday through
but
Friday.
It's early mornings.
Sometimes it's
but
way before the sunrise.
But I mean, if you are into this field and you love to be outside, what a better way to spend your morning.
Right.
Like since I've moved into management, I miss the mornings. Getting up early, watching the sunrise, hearing the birds chatter and come alive,
right.
Counting birds and doing that sort of thing. I mean, that is what we should be getting into that for.
Right. And that's what gets your blood moving. It's just it's excitement. And, you know, if you're dealing with an animal who's, you know, nocturnal, you may be up all night long.
Yes.
And
my sleep patterns have never
So you know, I was talking to our bat biologist. Yeah. And then they were up to 3 a.m. mist netting. And, you know, things like that happen. Not every day.
Right.
But usually when it does, it's multiple days because you're in that season.
That's right. You get it done.
Right.
And yes, it could be 70-hour work weeks, like hardly any sleep.
Right.
But it's so worth it
when
you look at the grand scheme of the goal of the project. And no, I have never recovered from my bat work. my most productive hours when I write, unfortunately, is between midnight and 3 a.m. But yeah, but it's, you know.
Yeah, and that's, you know, you work around the animal's schedules, not yours, because you're not going to change how they operate. They don't go by a clock. So, you know, like my favorite time of the year is the fall, but a lot of our monitoring that we do for birds is in the fall. So some of the stuff I'd like to be doing off somewhere during the fall time has to be adjusted because that's the peak time for doing covey counts.
That's right.
So, that, you know, you kind of have to know that you're going to have to work around these sort of things and plan around that. Your vacation time kind of comes second sometimes.
Yep. And, you know, with a lot of new employees that I deal with, you know, sometimes they have trouble adjusting to that idea. And I was just talking to someone about work allocation last night and how that person can, you know, supervise people who are kicking back a little bit on the alternative schedule. And it's like, there's really nothing you can do. Like, this will be the season. You only have to basically suck it up for a couple weeks and enjoy it.
Right.
You're outside, you're listening to birds, you're identifying plants. Like, this is why we got into it.
Right. That should be what you're wanting to do.
That's right.
Not sitting in front of the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Doing lots and lots of paperwork, which is a big part of all the positions.
Everything you do. It's a balance. You know, I looked at a lot of what I did for my dissertation work. You know, I did a lot of molecular work. Was not a fan of it. It is just not my jam, as you know. You had to help me with it. But I looked at it like I loved the field work, radio tracking tortoises and doing all this stuff. And where I was doing my work, I got to help a lot of other biologists or students do their stuff. And I looked at the molecular work and the statistics was kind of like my pay. I had to pay somewhere for getting to have fun.
Yeah.
It's a balance.
Yeah.
You know,
there's some of the stuff about the paperwork is a necessary evil.
That's right.
That's what I see it as. Yes, it's not fun. And the higher up you get, I guess, the more you get towards supervision and those sort of positions, the more paperwork you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
So I always caution a lot of the folks coming in that think they want to get into supervisory positions. Are you really wanting to do that right now? Spend the rest of your career doing paperwork. Mm-hmm. So think about, you know, as you get into some of the wildlife conservation careers, what you want to do in that. You know, are you wanting to be in front of a desk? Are you wanting to be hands-on? Do you want to sit on the tractor and do the work, light, you know, run a drip torch through the woods, you know, the fun stuff, and direct yourself that way. And as you get into those positions, don't come into it thinking that you're going to make six figures. You're not.
You're not. No. In order to make that kind of money and kind of get to that point where you have to sacrifice some fun for family and whatnot, you know, there are opportunities to move up and to get into, you know, better pay. But unfortunately, like a lot of fields, teaching, education, our society just isn't valuing those fields as much as we think they should.
Right.
I mean, we're literally saving the planet. So it's just a matter of everybody in conservation is kind of in the same boat that everybody is in education.
Right.
You know, when society values those two fields more, then we'll make more.
Right.
But right now, we're not
But don't turn down a job because it's not making some crazy amount of money that you think you're going to make, because everybody starts in at a lower end. The rare person that comes in and gets a nice, great, high-paying job, that doesn't happen very often. So do not expect that. Instead, expect coming in making really crappy pay to begin with. But that's stepping to
the... You kind of just have to work your way up. Yep.
And it should... That way, probably in any field that you go into, is you're going to start at the lower end.
Yep.
Or you should. I think you gain valuable experience that way.
Well, it's normal. And I also feel like, you know, we don't... I don't want any of my staff to be suffering. And if they're struggling, I want to know, because I want to help them find solutions.
Right.
And the bottom line is that's where your mentors can help you. You know, I don't expect or hope that any of my staff has to live in a tent for 6 months like I did when I first started. But that's also my personality. I really didn't care. I could live in the back of my truck like I did on my master's. But it's just, you got to kind of be ready to make some sacrifice.
Right.
To get in and volunteer and do some of that. And that's why in interviews, we ask a lot about soft skills, how you are with people, and, you know, the report stuff. Because like it or not, most of our projects are federally funded or funded by state agencies. And there are just a lot of reporting.
You pretty much have to justify your position a lot of times based on your funding.
Right.
And so you have to be really good at keeping detailed reports, keeping up with what you've done. And so if you're not a detail-oriented person, that's some skills you may need to work on a little bit. But there's always someone there who can kind of help you with that, too. I mean, it doesn't have to be to the minute, to the hour type of, you know, detail. But you do have to keep up with daily tasks and, you know, how your things that you're doing, and so that you can report in based on whatever the funding is.
So it's those skill sets. Like, I think we're talking about all this stuff to kind of give everybody an idea that it's not just playing in the woods.
No.
That it's, you have to come in with these other skills. And the other important thing, too, is that what's great about this field, a lot of times, is it's independent work.
Yes.
So your supervisor is saying, hey, this is your project. This is what we need done. And we're counting on you to independently go do it. Ask for help. You know,
right.
If you need training, we'll get you training. But that's what's nice about a lot of these positions, which I don't think a lot of people are ready for, independence.
Yeah. A lot of people can't self-motivate.
Yep.
Because they haven't had to do it. So I guess we can kind of step into, you know, some of the experience and how you get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, find positions, whether it's volunteer, internships, summer job, whatever it is, where you can learn to get that independent work experience, learn to kind of manage situations on your own. And that's where having a graduate project is very valuable, because most of the time you're given the project, your professor is going to say, here, go do this, and good luck seeing them again.
I was going to say, you're not going to see them, sorry.
Yep.
But, I mean, that's the reality.
And most of them, that's, you know, there's going to be the rare one who's very involved.
Yeah, go forth and conquer.
Right. Most are very hands-off.
Loved my advisors, for the record, but they did not come into the field with me very often, if at all.
No.
They helped me with the lab work because I was needy in that area. But Yeah, it's just a reality. It prepares you for it. That's why, like, undergraduate thesis, if I am looking at a resume and I see someone, like, worked in a lab or volunteered in a lab, was working on a right. project, I pull that because I'm like, okay, this person has some experience with independent work. So even though this might be your first job out of the gate,
right.
I know you've prepared, or if you volunteer, even if you volunteer, like, at a zoo or a vet clinic or something, right. like, that volunteering shows me initiative.
Yes.
You know, and I know not everybody can afford to do it, but there are small projects at school, you know, labs that
always,
hire.
Yes, always something going on that you can get into at the school. I worked
yep.
numerous lab jobs mm-hmm. or research jobs. There's always a research project with a graduate who's hiring, you know, the poor student.
Yeah. You know, and it, you know, it might be glamorous. Your job might be cleaning out mouse cages, but you're being exposed to the whole process.
Right. I looked under a microscope all day long counting zooplankton.
So that's what's wrong with you.
Yes. I have no eyesight anymore. <Damn it. laughs> But that's, you know, or I sat there and, you know, washed dishes in a lab, or, you know, there's different things, but they gave you here, these are your tasks, and, you know, you were responsible for doing them.
Yeah,
I've worked with plants and insects and fish and everything.
Yeah, that diversity is key also.
Yes.
I have taken some positions working with things that I never thought I would. But in each of those projects, I got all these little skills that eventually I was able to put together. And I think that's really what helps both of us with our partnership work that we do now, is that we just had this varied experience with a lot of different people.
Right.
And that's the other thing, too, is like partnerships and relationships are key. When you are out working these internships, and I see it on that Facebook career, wildlife career Facebook page, you know, some people are smart enough to go on there as anonymous, but when they're talking about how they're burning bridges at different jobs, it's like,
this is too small a field.
Absolutely. And most of us know who those difficult yes. employers are.
It gets out.
And we have, I will feel bad for you. And sometimes when I see that someone's gone through a program or through an internship, I'm like, oh, if you survive that,
yeah.
exactly. you acquired some good skills, hopefully,
yeah.
and learned from it.
Yeah. It is a small field.
Super small.
People hear things. We interwork a lot more than people think, whether you're an NGO, a state, federal agency.
Well, just like fisheries and wildlife, like
yes.
we all have to intermingle, because what our whole point and takeaway from this is that you need varied experience.
Right.
Just because you want to work with whales one day doesn't mean you don't take the job with mice.
Right.
Like, you have to do a lot of varied things, but that's how you get to know everybody.
Well, I see it as, you know, you don't pigeonhole yourself into one type of thing, because then if you get out there and, you know, I want to work with whatever little sparrow, this specific thing, and there's probably one job out there, maybe two, that does this, you know,
yep.
and if that's filled, then what are you going to do? So you're going to have to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get into these positions that are broader, if you've not done anything else, it's really hard to get in, because you've not had the experience doing it.
Yeah.
You can only talk about the one thing and they're like, yeah, and. But also, for most jobs, you're managing more of the ecosystem, not just necessarily the one species.
Mm-hmm.
I work with quail, but quail are an umbrella species. So everything we do for them benefits a lot of different animals.
And yeah, sometimes, it's a landscape approach.
Right. So we benefit. If I manage for tortoises, it benefits quail. So
that's
I can
right.
manage for a lot of things to get what I need. And if you don't understand that whole ecosystem concept, then you're not going to do real well. So I think it's important to get out there and get experience with different species, get experience with plants. And 90%, well, at least here in the Southeast, the majority of wildlife management is forest related.
Right.
So if you've not had a forestry class, I had nothing but forestry classes coming up, and we were thinking, oh my God, I'm a wildlife major. Why am I taking all these forestry classes? But if you don't manage the forest, you're not managing for the wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
So understand that, because it's very critical.
And yeah.
The longer I've been in it, you see more and more how critical it is to know the forest management side of it.
Oh, 100%.
In the industry.
Take the plant classes too.
Yes.
That's a great point too, is when you're working on your classes. You know, my undergraduate program was very like all the ologies, ornithology, herpetology, mammalogy. But we never got at habitat.
Right.
You know, and because of the way it was very lab focused. I had a minor in chemistry almost coming out, you know, because of what we took. So it's really important too that you prick in your program if you can.
Right.
To look at that management. And if for some reason you're tied to an area, you have to stay at home and go to school somewhere, make sure you're reaching out to the state agency and getting that habitat experience or, you know, your electives are with plants or forestry right. or something, or if you're taking something online, because I never, ever anticipated how much forestry. And, you know, I've had to self-teach myself a lot. But I've also taken upon myself to do some online stuff. And
plus, thing, it doesn't necessarily have to be in
audit classes.
Right.
Yep.
You can do it. There's a lot of online learning now, things you can audit, like you said. But know what you're going to need and know that it needs to be broad, not have to be all one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Usually you have some flexibility in your classes. You can go out and take, you know, from different departments, some things that will benefit you. And GIS work is huge now, so make sure you have something with GIS. Our writing skills are very important.
So important. I can't, we're probably going to talk about resumes and cover letters, but it is critical. Because I cannot, if you're writing something for an agency or you're having to write a report for a grant, you know, a lot of us that get into these points, we're assigning that to you with the expectation that we don't have to triage it as a professional.
Right.
So getting that writing is super critical. That's why I love some of the programs, university programs that are heavy on writing.
Right. And I think it's, even if you don't want to be a technician, I think it's critical that you understand equipment operation and have at least set your butt on a tractor.
Yeah.
Or handled a drip torch.
Mm-hmm.
Fire is a critical tool in wildlife management, so you better know how fire works.
And, that's right.
And have done it. There's plenty of opportunity to get out there and get experience doing fire if your school does not offer it. More of them, thankfully, are offering that opportunity now.
Yeah. But, you know, one of the things is that as a student, you can come to a landowner field day or landowner training. So if you see a training by, like, your forestry commission or your wildlife agency, you are allowed to attend that just like any other landowner. You're an adult.
Yeah.
Come learn. Go to the Learn Burn. Mm-hmm. Go to all the things.
And we sometimes set up workshops and things with that in mind, knowing that there are students or professionals in the area who just need that little bit of extra training.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's great for the landowners too, but we encourage professionals or soon to be professionals to get in and take advantage of that, those training opportunities.
And when they let me know they're there, you better believe like I'm making a mental note of their name or writing it down.
Right.
Because I'm like, if their resume comes across my desk, I want to make sure.
Right.
Like, pay attention.
So if you're a student in school and there's a volunteer opportunity with an agency, with an organization, whoever, you better be there. We do a lot of bird counts.
Yep.
And I remember the students who volunteered, and there's classes that come in and it's mandatory.
Mm-hmm.
But the students, even in the mandatory classes, who come up and speak to you, who take initiative, who maybe show up to another one, I remember those students. And things they show up for things that they're not don't have to. That goes a long way.
Yeah.
One other thing that's important, you know, for most positions, but especially if you're going to be working into private lands or some NGOs, you know, we mentioned already is writing. So writing classes, you want to be able to communicate well, whether you're working with landowners or the public or whatever, make sure that you're able to communicate to people. I'm always telling Addison that, you know, you're grammar needs to be good. You need to sound like you're intelligent. That really shows up. You may wind up on in front of a video camera sometimes.
That's my
we all dread.
Favorite thing.
So be prepared to be able to communicate with all different types of people. You need to be able to communicate with someone who doesn't have the education that you have, and then those that do. So be flexible. That's going to be very important in the majority of the positions that you're in. So like we were talking, find those classes or something outside of those classes. I encourage Addison now, you know, one of the things that she does is 4-H because they have to give speeches. So that gives her an opportunity to learn how to write and then get up in front of people and communicate. Because again, most of us are introverted and we don't like being in front of people. So find those opportunities to make yourself a little more comfortable. What other types of experience do you think are important? When we talked about volunteering, interns, paid, doesn't matter.
Yeah, so, you know, it's that finding the opportunities on campus. Because I had a sports scholarship to go to undergrad, that's the way I went to school. You know, I was in a city campus, so it was really hard. I was a little panicked, honestly, because I knew I wanted to go in wildlife or forestry, wanted to do something outside with animals, but there wasn't an opportunity. I was in literally in a city campus, but because I was outgoing in that way with professors and, you know, they saw my interest, I was able to make connections with like the Audubon Society there in Boston. And then the Harvard Natural History Museum, that's the other thing. Your natural history museums have opportunities sometimes. They were doing the entomological society. So I got into bug collecting and learned how to key things out. I was sitting next to E.O. Wilson and didn't even know who he was because he was just helping all of us identify our bugs and stuff through the club.
Right.
You know, and then Audubon, once I became a better birder, I started leading birding tours through Fens and Fenway Park, and which eventually led to being skilled enough that I could lead them at Mount Auburn Cemetery. And if anybody knows warbler migration time in Mount Auburn, it's one of the hot birding spots to be. And I did all that in a city environment and gained those skills. And I was also a zookeeper. And I learned about chemical immobilization at the zoo. A lot more animal handling. You know, I grew up as a farm kid, which is also rare
right
now and used to be easily transferable skills to wildlife. Yeah. But, you know, I just kind of figured it out and made it work. Yeah. So there are opportunities.
Point. Yeah, I like that. The good points is that, you know, there's clubs, there's organizations outside of the school that you can get engaged with, finding those interests. And a lot of those are very skilled at whatever that is, like the master birders. And, you know, it's important, even if birds aren't necessarily where you want to focus the majority of your career, it's still a wonderful skill to have, or plants or whatever. Find those opportunities out there, because not every school offers a great variety of educational opportunities.
Right.
And they don't teach you everything you need to know to be a career biologist.
Right. No.
You're not ready for the field coming out of school.
No. What was great about, you know, volunteering with Audubon and even some of the work at the zoo, a lot of the AZA accredited zoos, Association of Zoos and Aquariums, they also have to have a research or, you know, conservation research component. So they often have those connections. And so, again, even though I was at a city school working at a city zoo, I was able to make connections based on my interests. And they were like, hey, we've got this turtle tracking project we're working on. We need to send a couple people. Will you go?
Right.
Heck yes, I'll go. You know, so then I met the state agency people and that just opened doors, you know, to my master's project, which was largely state agency driven.
Networking.
Yes.
So important.
We just talked about not liking people.
But that's critical.
That's who's going to get you where you need to be.
And as an undergrad, networking is still very critical because that gets you your graduate projects if that's something you're looking at doing. And on both levels, it gets you in front of people who have jobs. Mm-hmm. And trust me, we do remember people.
Yes.
I may not remember your name because I'm horrible at names, but if you'll remind me, hey, we met at, I know now.
Yep. And I have just applied to your position.
Right.
I love those emails because it makes things a little easier.
Yes. Reach out. Definitely don't be afraid to reach out and say, hey, I'm looking at this position. Can you tell me more about it or whatever?
Yeah. No, asking questions is important. Reaching out to people, you know, again, on that Facebook page, I see people complaining that your dog is here. Hey, Dash. You know, people will say, well, I don't have opportunity. There is opportunity. It's going to be hard if you want to do what you want. Nothing's going to get handed to you. And this is kind of when I get on that soapbox and we talk about sacrifice. We've talked about sometimes you got to do things that you don't necessarily want to do to get ultimately where you want to be. And some of the experiences that I really wasn't crazy about, talk about talking right.
Yep.
Ended up opening doors to things that I never would have considered.
Yeah.
Did I ever think I'd be in a parasitology lab at a university working on my dissertation?
Right.
No.
Well, I never thought disease work was never crossed my mind.
Oh, yeah. And it opened so many doors.
Oh, but I loved it. I spent 14 years doing disease work.
And yeah, I love it.
Absolutely love doing it. And it's not a career path I would have thought about. Mm-hmm. So that's another reason I think it's important to get out and experience and volunteer and see what's out there so that you know kind of what direction you want to go in your career. You may find things that never would have crossed your mind in the first place. So once you have that experience, and as we mentioned, some good varied experience, you've decided kind of what you want to do, start looking for jobs. And I encourage you, whether you're doing internships or looking at jobs, if you can, obviously, if you know, family life, if you're tied somewhere, you can't get outside. But if you can get outside of your area and go some other places, that's going to open up a lot more opportunities and give you more varied experience.
Yes. And one of the things that's kind of expected or something you're just stuck with in our field are those temporary gigs, you know, while you get experience before you move up to those supervisory, more full-time, long-term positions is moving around.
Right.
You know, and that's how you get the experience. And there are even some people that make that their whole career is just bouncing and moving. And it's the one, I think it's one of the only professions where we look at a resume and see someone bouncing that we're like, okay. They were just getting their experience doing their seasonal gigs.
Right.
Like it's part of it. You know, you might have a seasonal gig, you know, for a few months, and then you're working at a gas station for a couple months, and then you're going to do your next seasonal. It's accepted. We understand that. I encourage it. Get out and see things.
And I've noticed, too, that, you know, especially if you're working with certain organizations or HCs or whatever, that if you want to move up the chain, you're probably going to have to move to do that, unless you start out right there where, you know, their headquarters is.
Yeah.
So be prepared that if that's your goal, you may have to move around to get to those higher positions or just wait for somebody to keel over and die.
Oh, that took a turn. Yeah.
Don't plant any thoughts there, but
good grief. Yeah. Yeah. Because a lot of us plan on dying in our chairs once we get into some of these positions. But they, I grew up in Massachusetts. I thought I'd be working for Mass Wildlife, the state agency, you know, just love the people. And here I am in Georgia and all my mentors have retired. So I love it down here. I fell in love with habitat. It's just moving around, getting that experience.
That's like I said, you never know what you may fall in love with and what may stir your passion until you go out and try a bunch of different things. Mm-hmm. So now you've got all that. You're looking for a job. You need to have a resume.
The bane of my existence. Oh, I can't even, I was thinking about it the other day, how long I've been a manager, how many resumes I've gone through. I mean, just this year, I think I've had to sort through 1,000 resumes at least for our positions.
Yeah.
And there are some pet peeves with the resume. I want it clean. I don't mind a bulleted resume. I don't mind a 3 or 4 page resume.
I like a bulleted resume because then I can skim.
Simple. Yes. I'm looking for keywords. I'm reading through it fast. You know, some of the basic things. I want to see where you went to school, what your degrees are.
Yes.
Have you won any awards?
Yes.
Put it on there. Even if you were, an athlete in school, throw it up there.
Oh, yeah.
That might explain.
Team sports are
huge. That's another podcast for another day on what team sports gives you, but it's a skill. You learn things there, but you know, include all that and, you know, just
relevant
keep it
experience.
Simple. Yes. Don't try to make something flowery that isn't. Just get to the point.
Right.
Like it doesn't have to be long. And in school, everybody was like, you should keep it to one page and all this.
Oh, that's, you can't.
No.
The longer you're in a career, you can't and have all your relevant experience.
I mean, I think mine is 12 pages at this point. And that's the short version.
Yeah.
But I've also published. But the thing is like you are looking for keywords. And sometimes that means, now we've told you the secret sauce, like sometimes you have to cater or tailor your resume.
Especially
to
in a federal position.
Yes.
Because a lot of organizations now run these resumes through a software system that looks for keywords.
Or they've hired a contractor to take that first pass through.
Or they'll have somebody sitting in HR that just goes and looks for those keywords. Mm-hmm. So have your base resume. And then when you get a job description that you're applying for, tailor it. Yes. Change some of the wording if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
Shorten certain things or take certain things out or whatever, depending on the position. So if you're interviewing or applying for a position where there's some sort of supervisory requirement in there and you've not done that in your field, but you've supervised people at McDonald's or whatever, that's relevant experience. Now, you don't need to tell me that you cooked fries and flipped burgers, but just a quick line in there, I worked at McDonald's and I supervised X number of people.
Yeah, especially when you've gone through like a manager training or something. People don't think it's important because it's just, it was just the gas station. It was just this restaurant, but it's really important depending on what position you're applying for. And I've also seen this trend of just listing where you worked, not putting time, like the dates.
Yes, do that.
Put the dates because I don't want to sit and do the math in the head. I don't know if you spent 4 years at one place, 1 year at one place, or you spent 2 months, and you need to know because that tells me how much experience you might really have. Somewhere.
Yes. Do it in chronological order and tell me when you were there for how long.
Yep.
And then you don't have to give me every detail of your job.
Mm-mm.
It's just whatever's relevant to that position. And that's going to vary depending on what it is. So that way, if you listed everything, you're probably going to have a 12-page resume or more.
Mm-hmm.
You can shorten that down some by making sure that you have just the relevant information.
3 to 5 key job responsibilities.
Right.
A brief sentence at the top outlining like your basic role.
Right.
Then some key points.
Right. So good resume.
And then real quick on the resume, this sounds really ridiculous, but it's not. Please follow the naming conventions as instructed in the job description. So follow the instructions on how to format things, because I want to have your last name, first name, resume in the title or in the, I'm blanking. It gets me so fired up. It's when you save your file, name your file with your name and resume or something.
Right.
Like usually who I work for now, we have instructions. But when I'm trying to share with partners or people who are going to be on the hiring committee, it's so frustrating to have to, save as and do all that. And you might get lost. Like, I don't mean to lose you in the process, but if I haven't, for some reason, I squirreled while I was renaming files for y'all, I might forget you.
Or it just says resume.
That's my worst fear.
Right.
Yes. Just say so-and-so resume.
Yeah, put your name on it.
Resume.
Please put your name on it.
Mm-hmm.
Put your last name, first initial, whatever it is. But put your name on it. Don't just say resume because if we have 100
I have 20 in here that say resume. Yeah. I know that seems like a really small thing, but just that attention to detail really goes a long way for me.
And like you said, I don't need the cutesy resumes. I don't need your pictures on them and all these little flowery stuff.
Don't.
That's annoying. Don't do it.
Just well, we're also basic. Very plain.
Oh my God. But even though it's distracting.
Yeah, you don't need
When they get into some of the corporate and all this, they say, draw attention to your resume.
Yeah.
That's not the attention we want in this field.
Mm-mm.
I don't want to see all that. I don't need it. I don't have time to go through it. And there may be some of the corporate folks may be the same way. I don't know. But just a basic resume. Make sure you have all your information. Make sure you have references. I don't need to have this whole flowery work statement goal thing in there too. Some people like them.
It
doesn't mean a whole lot.
Your presentation on your resume and cover letter tells us a lot about you.
Spelling,
everything else. Like, please have people help you with it.
Proofread.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Please have somebody proofread. And it doesn't take long. If it doesn't make sense to someone else and you send that up to someone who's hiring, it does not do you any favors.
Yeah.
I don't care how great your experience is.
So that segues us into a cover letter. Sometimes required, sometimes not.
Right.
Even if it's not required and you're allowed to upload other things, I love a cover letter because it shows me how you communicate, even if you had help writing it. then I, at least I know you asked for help.
Right.
You know, but it, that's your chance to be like, hey, I was, my resume looks light. I was a Division I athlete. I couldn't do X, Y, and Z while I'm in school, but I've done this.
Right.
You know,
that's a chance to shine.
It's to shine, to explain like gaps in employment, you know, because if I see a gap in employment, sometimes I'm like, they work somewhere they might have gotten fired from.
Yeah.
You know, I know that's super negative place to go, but I, it's happened more times that I'm like, hey, what is this gap in employment? And they're like, well, I was fired, you know, and it's like, talk about that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just,
it's going to, you know, come up. It's listed. Going to be found most likely.
Again, small world.
Exactly.
I mean, that might not just not have been your jam. Right. All right. But the biggest pet peeve that literally causes me to just sometimes not even consider a resume is when the cover letter is addressed to someone else for some other job.
Oh, gosh.
And it's not been changed. And I, yes. I understand we are firing out a million resumes to different places. It is hard out there. We get it. I will sometimes give the person the benefit of the doubt in email and say, hey, you uploaded this cover letter. Are you sure you're applying for the right position? Just to double check that they knew what they were applying for.
Right.
You know, in that interaction afterwards, don't freak out.
Yes.
Like, mistakes happen. I think I'm pretty reasonable most of the time. Some people might argue. But, I mean, it happens. Yes. I'm sure I've done it. You know.
We all have done things. If you want to have a template, cover letter, mm-hmm. template, resume, where you're going to change up stuff in there,
yeah,
save it as a template. And then when you do, leave your blanks, and then when you fill it out for that job, mm-hmm. you can save them separately for that job.
Yeah. So I'm looking at some of my files right now and how people name their files, and I love it because they're, you can tell that they're applying for different positions probably because it has their name, and then it'll say, like, the company that they're applying for mm-hmm. in their file name. So,
yep.
I mean, that's a really smart way to do it, to make sure you're not uploading
the wrong
thing, and we're not like,
yep.
Like, what are you applying for?
Exactly. So, and we all do the same template over, and there's no reason to recreate the wheel. Just make sure to double check again. There's your proofreading. And as you're applying for a position, my pet peeve is to know who you're applying with.
Oh, yeah.
Research a little bit. I mean, in this digital age, it does not take long to Google whatever company that you're going to work for, whatever yeah. organization, and learn a little bit about them and read the freaking job description and
yes.
know what you're supposed to do. A lot yes. of times there's a lot of clues in a job description.
Yeah. So I write my job descriptions to hopefully be clear enough that people know what they're getting in for. But I also give you research points.
Yes,
to walk in the door. So if
get ready for an interview.
Yes, we're giving you the cheat. Now, you and I function this way. I know other people don't. So I apologize to you for having to deal with those other people. But like, my job description is literally a cheat sheet for your interview.
Right.
If I'm going to ask you specifics, I'm going to like know the company's mission, know that what you're signing up for. If you're applying to a state agency's game management program or an NGO that is geared towards hunting and things like that, be ready to answer like your thoughts about hunting, because it's pretty critical when we deal with the public.
Yes.
But yeah, having.
Right. If you were going in and, you know, applying to, you know, Fuzzies R Us, and they wanted to know, well, what do you know about our company? Then you better have researched Fuzzies. I mean, whatever it is.
Sorry. You just giggles with that one. Fuzzies R Us. Can we explain that?
I have a feeling there's probably a company out there somewhere.
Probably. I'm not going to Google it.
I'm not Googling. But I've been on several interviews helping partners or with our own, and a question will come up about, you know, what do you know about the company? What do you know about mm-hmm. what our goals or whatever is? And you get this, and they stumble around. And you're like, how have you not looked up who you're
right.
working
and
for?
What the thing is now is we're doing so many interviews virtually. You can have it right in front of you. It's like an open book test. But
I was just like, Please don't Google stuff your
while you're interviewing.
I can hear your keyboard.
Yes, or when your roommate's in the room and you're like, wait, what's a Bob White?
Like, that's the other thing. If you're interviewing for a species-specific job, you better know about this species.
Yeah.
Yeah, you may not have experience with it, but show me that
If it's entry level.
You've looked at it. Right.
That's
show
right.
me that you've looked up and took some time. That counts a lot of times. We can tell if you've just sat down and researched it. But that shows
initiative.
Thank you. And that is key in a lot of these positions is you've got to have initiative to move forward. So resumes, to go back before we get into some of the interview stuff, is it needs to be all your key points that are related to that job. It needs to be clear, concise as you can. I mean, sometimes it's going to be multiple pages. That doesn't matter. Give me all your information. If you're having to fill out an application, and usually applications, you know, have areas where you list your jobs and there's not a lot of space, do the application as much as you need to, but then attach a resume. Always attach a resume.
Because when we get those printouts from where you input the boxes, it looks terrible half the time. I don't know why those templates
It doesn't are give so you terrible. Space. And I don't like reading through them. Half the time, I don't even look at the application beyond the initial contact information. I want the resume because that's where I can get that information from.
Yeah, and it's quick. And what I do love is that schools are doing a relatively good job with preparing students, or Google is doing a good job preparing applicants. But there does seem to be a nice standard resume now, so I'm able to look through things very quickly. And
yeah,
that's nice.
So just, you know, make sure you've got your education. I see some that sometimes leave out some of their education.
Yeah. And if you haven't graduated, put your expected graduation date, because I don't want to guess. And because sometimes, honestly, unfortunately, if we need to fill something faster for both of our companies, you have to have degree in hand.
Yeah.
And
sometimes there's some leeway on it, but not always. And I don't want to get to the end and go through all this and go, oh, shoot, they've not.
Yeah, we don't want to waste your time.
Right. If you want to interview, I encourage you to get interview experience. But don't get everybody's hopes up go through all the paperwork.
You also never know. Like,
that's true.
And that's something we haven't talked about, is that you might not feel like you're qualified for something. Try anyways. It is very competitive out there, but it's going in both directions.
Right.
So we're competing for you. And you're competing for us. It goes both ways. So you never know when you might get that opportunity, or I might have a position that I can take someone that's just graduating, and because I have time to mentor or train in that position.
And depending on the time of the year when the position comes out, there may not be a lot of quality competition.
That's right.
And it's so hard to find a quality applicant because everybody is fighting over the same few quality applicants that are out there. So if you think you've got it, my Lord, please.
Take a chance.
Yes, do it. Mm-hmm. We're looking for good people. What are we out in the military? We need a few good men or women. So resumes, you've got that. You get it sent up. Make sure you've got your application. Everything that it says in the job description announcement, you send all that in.
Mm-hmm. And if there's a contact at the bottom of it, so the person, the manager handling the position, like, I don't get upset when you follow up with me and say, hey, just want to introduce myself, like through an email, just want to introduce myself. I applied for blah, blah, blah. I might not have time to respond to you. I try to, but that honestly goes a long way.
Yes. And I'm not going to be able to tell you what to study for the interview or whatever. You know, I can tell you some background about the position if you want that. So definitely, I don't have a problem with people reaching out.
Nope.
All right. The interview. So you've gotten through all the pre-selection process, and now you are selected to do an interview.
Mm-hmm.
If you have an option to do an in-person interview, and you can do it.
Especially if it's a position you really want.
Yes. I always ask if there's an in-person option.
Yes.
Those go so much better.
Mm-hmm.
You can read people a lot better. You interact with them.
You get to know.
Right.
Yeah. Or am I going to jive with my supervisor?
Right. Because there's communication before and after the interview when you're in person. Because they're bringing you in. They're getting situated. They're taking you back out. So there's opportunity to just interact.
Might get to go to lunch with a bunch of people.
Yeah. Yes, you never know. You get to see the environment that you might be working in. So definitely do an in-person interview if that's an option. Second then would be a virtual with video. And last, and I try not to do any of those, would be a phone interview. I despise a phone interview.
Yeah, I really don't like them. And if you have to do a phone interview because you're at a remote location or something, I totally get it.
Yeah.
But let me know that's the reason why you're doing a phone interview, because... Yeah.
Can I follow up with you when I have signal?
Yeah, it does put those applicants at a disadvantage, I think.
It does, because you can't read facial expressions and, you know, you can only get so much through tone of voice, and it's hard over a phone. I've sat down and done we do so many virtual interviews now because people are so scattered.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times I can sit there and I'm sitting there talking to the person. You can see them through the screen and you see how nervous that person is.
Oh, yeah. I totally take that into consideration. Like, if you're struggling and I can see you're nervous, I'm going to ask things a little bit differently.
Right.
I might take things down a notch. You can't do that when it's just a phone.
And you understand because, you know, especially if it's someone that either... someone we know is called, hey, this person's interviewing, or we know some of their references that we see, and we get a good reference for that person. This person's really good at what they do. And then they sit there and you see that they're just so nervous and they're not doing that great of a job with the interview, but you know they can do a whole lot better.
Right.
That allows you to adjust a little bit and see, because everybody gets nervous,
right?
Especially with the interviews.
Well, we've had a couple people completely bomb their interview, but their references were great. Like, it was good enough that we were like, all right, they're just having an off day, but their resume was good, cover letter was great, references were, or we got a phone call from someone like, hey, give this person a second chance, and they've turned out to be great employees.
And some agencies have, or organizations, the agencies don't have quite as much leeway to change and do, you know, a little second follow-ups,
right,
as some of the organizations do. But sometimes that is an option, that they can go back in and talk to you again.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on interviews where you get an interview and then you get called back in for another interview and a third interview even. And those are
brutal.
I hate those. They're brutal because you'll spend hours and hours. I was like, oh my gosh, what do you want from me? It's like, do I need to donate an organ or what's going on? But just be prepared that everybody's a little bit different. Yeah. When it comes to interviews.
And if you don't know an answer, just say you don't know. I really prefer that over, and I'm more likely to give someone a chance if they don't try to BS me with an answer.
Right.
Because, like, you're talking to experts on the other end. Just don't. It's fine.
Right.
Most of our positions are entry level. We don't expect you to know it. Sometimes we're asking you a question to see how you handle it.
Right. And I don't go... For every question, I don't know. Because you obviously know something. And so say, I'm not really sure about this, or I'm not familiar with this, but if I had to guess, this would be what I do. Or this is what I've learned in a class, or this is what I think about this. So if you're not really sure about it, give me the information you do know. It doesn't have to be exact. But see, I can see you connecting things.
Well, that goes back to the nerves, too.
Right.
Like, let's have a conversation about this and work this out.
Right.
Especially if they come from a school where I'm familiar with their program and I know they've learned it.
Yeah.
It's like, let's just talk it out, because half the time it's because you're nervous.
And that's what, like you said, talking it out. As you start talking about it, sometimes something will pop in your mind. Oh, yeah, I remember this.
Mm-hmm.
And then this. And so, one, don't assume that the interviewers know everything that you know.
Right.
And you know that they're experts in whatever it is, but you go into an interview pretending that they don't know anything, and you're explaining everything about it, everything that you know. You know, I haven't gone through classes with you or done a job with you, so I don't know what little things that you've done. So if I'm asking you to, you know, explain how you sample for roly-polies or whatever it may be, you know, go through that procedure. The fuzzies. Let's go back to fuzzy ink. And so I want to know how you handle it. How do you manage for them? What does it need? And go through everything you can think of. It may be a long answer. Sometimes it may be a short answer. Just depends upon the question. But don't think that you have to have a really quick, short answer and move on. But please don't talk for half an hour about it.
I'll have
those two.
And but also too, like, don't be afraid to pause after the question. Make sure you understand it and think about it.
Right. I encourage people to have a notepad, write the question down. If it's not provided for you, make a note or two about things. Okay, I want to touch this, this, and this, and then start talking about it.
Yep.
And that's perfectly fine.
Especially when you're nervous.
Yes, that slows you down and kind of lets you breathe. Yeah, do that. Often we'll, if we're in person, we'll provide a notepad if someone wants to do it. You know, if you want to take notes, go for it. Yep. But again, if you're doing this virtually, take your notes. That's fine. But do not sit there and Google something. Please don't do this. And don't have pre-prepared notes that you're reading from.
Yeah.
I've seen people flip through notebooks and books and stuff before. Oh, I had this somewhere. I remember I looked this up.
Yeah.
Don't do that. That's not good.
Yeah.
Off the cuff. Take a note for the question if you need to, if it's not provided for you. And then tell what's in your brain, not what's sitting on a piece of paper somewhere in front of you or on your computer screen.
Yeah. And, you know, again, back to the job descriptions. If there are terms in the job description that you don't know, look it up.
Yes.
Before the interview. Or ask for clarification before the interview. If something hasn't been clear, because that's going to be your job. And the whole point is to see what you know about this or your ability to research and learn more about it before walking in the door.
Yeah. Be clear on what they're asking, because if you go in and start spouting all your knowledge, thinking that you're an expert on this, and you're just totally off base.
Yeah. I don't care that you say, if I ask you a question like, hey, what's the life cycle of a fuzzy wuzzy? And you're like, well, you know, I saw it in the job description and I looked it up and it seems like this and this is really cool. Hey, that's fine.
Yeah.
It shows me you researched it. You're able to learn and apply.
Yeah.
So it's, don't be afraid.
Yep.
I think that's the bottom line.
Oh, yeah. Don't be afraid. And don't sell yourself short. In a lot of the wildlife field, how you manage for one species is very similar to how you manage for another species.
Yes.
So just because you've not worked with rainbow trout, but I've worked with largemouth bass or whatever it may be, there's very similar steps into doing that.
That's right.
So when they ask you, how do you manage for rainbow trout? Well, I've not worked with rainbow trout, but I have worked with largemouth bass. And in doing that, we do this, 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 things that would be very similar to what we would do for trout.
Yeah.
So take your relevant experience and make sure that that's put out there so that they see that.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be an exact, you know, maybe you didn't monitor a certain way for fuzzy wuzzies, but we did it this way. We did it for slimies instead of fuzzies, and we're going to do this. Maybe. So make sure you get that information out there. Don't just sell yourself short, well, I haven't done it. And leave it at that. No, don't do that.
Yeah. Unless you haven't done. I mean.
Right.
Don't.
If you have no relevant experience whatsoever, yes. But.
Don't be like, well, this one time I helped my grandma make cookies.
Yeah.
That's
not. Has nothing to do with it. But I learned about this in class. So you haven't done it. I haven't had a chance to do this
hands-on. Like the GIS question. I think almost every org asks this question. So I'm not selling either of our organizations out. But what is your experience with GIS?
Yes.
I have had experience in class. Great. Thank you. That's good enough.
Right.
For a lot of what we're doing. Right. But
well, the one I see a lot is, have you written management plans? Well, you may not have written one out in the field, but you probably wrote something in a class, because the majority of schools sit there and give you an opportunity to write some sort of management plan. So I've had experience writing this away and make sure, because if you just say, I don't have any, then I'm kind of concerned that you've not written anything.
Right. If you know, you've come from one of those programs.
Yeah.
Like sometimes we know you are not in a program. You might not have had that opportunity. Right. And again, that's also fine. Just, I guess, to be honest.
Yep.
You know, don't make something sound like something it's not.
Yep.
And if you can apply something that you've done before to what we've asked.
Yes.
You know, then that's, we have people from up north that are afraid to come to Sound South or vice versa. And a lot of times management is all about structure. So we don't care about the specific species, because you can apply it in different landscapes, like fire or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it translates.
Right. Just be confident, not overly confident. You don't have to be over. I've seen those come in and you're just like,
cocky.
Oh my gosh. Yes. The cockiness. Be confident in your abilities and your education. let that show through, tell what you know, take a deep breath, relax. We've never bitten anyone yet. And
I'd like to punch someone in the face, but I've had one we've not done that.
Really wanted to.
Sorry, not sorry.
I know. I've seen people cry during interviews.
Oh.
And just, it happens sometimes, but
see, that's why I'm glad. I love the fact that I work for who I do, because I'm able to back down an interview, completely change the tone and the questions, and not ask stuff. Like, if I know someone is just barreling and just doesn't know, this isn't for them. I try to make it a positive experience.
Yep.
For some of y'all, just need to keep trucking through, and it is horrible.
Yep. And if it's just, if you're just in so much pain with this and you just say, I just need to stop.
Yep.
That's fine. Mm-hmm. Know your limits on it too. But know that most of the time, the interviewers will try to adjust where they can. Now, Sometimes it's just, they're not able to change questions and do stuff. Sorry about that, but
that's where it's sometimes the I don't know.
Right.
And I've even enjoyed some interviews where someone's like, I don't know, but that sounds interesting. Can you explain it to me?
Right.
And we talk to them about it, and it's a conversation.
Right. And just saying, you know, I haven't experienced very much experience with it, whatever. I just came out of school. I'm just looking to get my feet in the door, and you know, I just don't know what to do about this. So after the interview is done, a follow-up, thanking them for the interview always is nice. Just know that every organization is a little bit different on how they process things moving forward. Some won't be able to move very fast. Some are going to move slower than snail's pace.
Yeah.
If it's one of those and you get a job in the interim before you hear from someone, let them know
you're not in it anymore.
Right, because you may be in the process, the paperwork chain of them being able to hopefully offer you something. So don't make them wait till they get all the way to the end and then find out that you've already taken a job, because
that's really slow. A lot of state agencies, it starts the clock again for the next person.
Right.
And so it's painful.
Right. And, oh, Lord, it's a pain.
So see, I don't have that problem either.
Right.
It sounds like you're working.
So we just want to make sure that, you know, you give a courtesy to the people who are doing the hiring as well.
I love it. We're getting a ton of applications for positions. Now, a few years ago, we had the opposite problem, but I feel like we're getting inundated right now, which is a great problem to have.
Yeah.
But that also requires patience. So I'm not moving as fast as I could, because I actually sit and read stuff and I don't want to miss something.
Right. Yeah. And
it takes a while.
You know, we've been in that situation where we've gotten down to there's one person to interview.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that person works out great, and sometimes we just have to start all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Get out there, take the opportunity to interview if you get a chance to. Get someone to mock interview you. Sometimes the schools will do those. Those are great.
Yep. And, you know, if you have an interview and you feel like it was a good interview, I don't mind answering these questions. But if you don't get the position and you want to follow up later and say, hey, can I have some feedback?
Right.
If I have time, I'm less likely to have time to sit and like walk you through your resume, but I'll have a conversation with you.
Yeah.
You know, and try to pull stuff up, and it's just, don't be afraid sometimes to reach out.
Yeah. And like, not always do we have an opportunity, but we'll try to give you some sort of feedback. And sometimes it wasn't anything that you did wrong. It's just somebody was just either one that much better.
It's competitive.
Yeah.
And again, that website or Facebook page, everyone is complaining about how competitive it is.
I've had interviews, and they're not very often, but I've had a few where I'm like, oh my God, I would just hire everybody that I just interviewed.
Yeah.
Why don't I have more positions right now to put these people in?
Mm-hmm.
Where were they a few months ago? And sometimes it just comes down to a personality. Somebody thinks they're going to work better with whoever it is that they're going to have to deal with, or they're local. Sometimes that makes a difference. I'm going to say it does sometimes, because they're less likely to leave.
Yeah.
Now, not always.
Well, again, it's relationships. So some of these positions, you know, having that local person is just sometimes so nice.
Right. It is, because, you know, they're going to work well, especially if they're working with people, with the public.
Mm-hmm.
And they can kind of communicate they're from there. That makes people more at ease.
Yeah,
but that's not always the case. Sometimes someone's personality just really shines, and they can work with whomever. So don't be down on yourself Everybody kind of has a bad interview every once in a while. It happens. Just get in there and hopefully you'll get that dream job eventually, but it may take a little while to get there.
But so that's the key. Eventually.
Yes.
It is so rare to come out of the gate into that dream job.
Yeah.
It's just into the pay that you would like.
Right.
Everybody would love to make $50,000, $60,000 off of coming out. But right. That's just not the reality in our field.
No.
You know, you might have to have roommates.
Yep.
You know, it's just...
Eat bologna sandwiches and ramen noodles.
Yep.
Been there, done that. But also, you know, when you take a position, because this is my step into the door, this is the way I can feed myself and not be homeless, you may find that that's a new passion for you, whatever this position is. So give a job a chance. Don't go into it going, oh God, I've got to do this just because I can't get anything else until something else comes along. And no matter what position you're at, give it your all. Because again, like we mentioned earlier, it's a small field.
And you're going to need that reference.
This is experience. Use it as an opportunity to gain experience, to gain connections, and get yourself moving forward to the next level if that's what you want to do. Again, you may find that this is an awesome thing and I love it. That's how I got into diseases. You know, my first job out of school was I had to find something and I had done some lab work. So I had experience, stepped into it, got to doing wildlife diseases and absolutely loved it. So give every position an opportunity and don't just give up on it.
Yeah.
All right. Any closing thoughts on it? We've been at this for a little while. I know this was a long one, but there's a lot to talk about.
And it's something you and I have wanted to talk about, whether or not anybody listens to it. But right. I think, you know, it's just we see a lot of this on some of these listservs and Facebook pages, people complaining. And I was joking, I don't know how I haven't been kicked off of some of them with my commentary. But just sacrifice to get into some of this.
Yes.
And just focusing, and it is hard.
Right.
It is hard.
It is hard.
It's the bottom line.
Right.
You know, and no one's holding your hand.
No.
You need, that is rare. You need to take initiative.
Yes.
Be independent.
Be realistic.
Realistic. This is not Animal Planet.
No. Have realistic expectations for any position, whether it's the pay, what you're going to do, the location, whatever it is. Yeah, this is... Yep.
And keep in mind, like, you always kind of have to reset your brain for the job that you're in. Right. Like, you might have a very small role in your perception of conservation, but every role that we all play is super important.
Oh, it is.
And that's why, like, I never thought I'd be working in, like, private lands and stuff like that and policy. But here I am because that happened to be where my skill set took me. And it's has a huge impact on what we do and on conservation. You kind of have to put where you are in perspective in the big chain
right.
of what flexible. This takes. Yeah. Be flexible is, you know, yeah. a really big thing. And
yeah. And then you kind of touched on, we kind of mentioned it earlier was, you know, it, being part of that team
because mm-hmm.
conservation is teamwork.
Yes.
It's not going to be one person doing it. So
no, it's networking, it's partnerships.
Right. So you are, no matter what position you're in, it is still a critical part of conservation. Enjoy it. Starting in at these entry-level positions, enjoy being out in the field and getting to know people yeah. and doing the hands-on, because as you progress through your career and you get into higher positions, that goes away a lot. And then you're saying, let me out of the office.
I miss the peanut butter and jelly on the tailgate days.
Yes.
That was...
They're hard work.
It is hard work.
But... behind the desk. It's not a walk of the park. I'm sorry, whatever anybody thinks. This yeah. is not me just sitting around and doing all fun. Well, I don't really do much every day but sit down and tell people what to do. No, that is not the case at all.
That's totally what you do. You are the ultimate micromanager.
Oh, God.
She's not.
But, you know, it's not like we're just sitting around twiddling our thumbs either.
No, I'm on the phone almost all day long.
Doing the non-fun stuff. So enjoy the fun.
But it's where we are.
Yes.
It's our role.
But it's still important.
It is important. It is conservation. Someone has to do all steps of things.
Right.
And that's why sometimes I harass people and say, what are you doing today? Or I go burn with someone that I know is yep. out there.
Can I go on a site visit with you? Can I go do this?
I need pyrotherapy today.
Right.
Who's going to entertain me?
Put on a tractor. I needed to run over some things.
Yep.
So enjoy. If this is something that is a passion for you, you know, the outdoors, conservation, resources, wildlife, whatever it may be, get out there and do a few things to make sure this is really what you want to do as a career and not just as a hobby, because that is a difference. Get your experience, get your education, build that resume, and then be prepared for interviews, follow up.
And just know that a lot of what you've been exposed to in your classes is some of the best stories. It's the success stories. You know, it's the quick wins.
Yep.
And conservation is a marathon.
Yes.
We're rarely getting that quick win.
Right.
It's working with someone that is skeptical. And then 10 years later, they're calling you up saying, hey, I got birds, or I did this. You know, it's a slow process sometimes.
Yep.
And, you know, you just got to keep fighting. And I just think about that ecological education quote by Leopold all the time. I just keep that in my head that, you know, my mom has jokes with me like, man, you know, she hears me on the phone. She's like, your job's kind of depressing. And it's like, well, yeah, it's, you know, doom and gloom sometimes, but I feel like we're all
those are knee deep in the good and the bad, and a lot of times the bad will overtake it for a while. So,
but you just got to reset yourself.
Yep.
We're doing a lot of good out there in our small roles.
Yep,
it makes big gains.
Yep,
it's just that it might take a minute for you to get to where you feel like you're being impactful.
Yep. So, if you're a student or you know an early professional, or you know someone who is wanting to get into the field and they have questions, feel free to reach out to Jess or I. If it's not a topic that we're real familiar with, then we can point you in the direction of someone who does. Yeah. Like we said, this is a small field, so we probably know somebody. Mm-hmm. I know people. And
she knows people.
A lot of places.
The thing we didn't mention quickly.
All right.
Conferences.
Oh, gosh.
We missed conferences. That is a great place to network.
Yes.
Wildlife Society, your state Wildlife Society chapters, go.
Yes.
Meet people, learn things.
Yes, definitely do. Yes. Get yourself out there.
Even as an undergrad, you can go. Yes. You might have to pay out of your pocket, but it'll be worth it.
There's opportunities that they'll pay for
you. Scholarships.
Yep.
Yep.
So someone will sponsor you to go. All right. So, yeah, we run along on this one. Than what we normally do, but it was a lot to talk about. And if anyone has questions, feel free to reach out to us, WildlifeHer on Facebook, like us on whatever podcast platform that you're on, send us some comments if you can. And until next time, we'll see you.